None of us know what tomorrow will bring. None of us will know what tomorrow brings. So prepare your business now for the future. And, you know, start to be really mindful of, you know, how will you protect your legacy? How will you ensure that you've got the right buyer?
Welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast with business strategist, speaker and author, Gavin Preston. Tap into this meeting of minds between everyday business people on their journey to master business growth. Join them as they share strategies, insights and shortcuts to help you survive and thrive in business and life as you scale your business and achieve a bigger impact.
Hi and welcome back to the Business Mastermind Podcast. Today, I've got the pleasure of speaking to a really good friend of mine and fellow investor on the journey and business partner in the space of acquisitions, Susanna Hancock. Susanna, good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Really, really good. And today, we've got a shared interest and passion around acquisitions and more specifically, helping business owners who want to be able to retire to exit their business for the amount of money that they desire and to be able to go on and do other things in their life whilst their business continues to thrive and the people in their business stay in employment and also continue to thrive. So one of the things that I wanted to get into this conversation together was you're preparing an article that you're going to launch on LinkedIn soon, Susanna. So share with us about the article because I think it's very, very relevant.
Yes. So the article is ADHD, M&A and Me. Tempted to throw in Richard Branson in there as well because he's relevant too. So the article really is about my journey really that's led me to be where I am now, which is in the field of mergers and acquisitions. And actually, I like to think that, for me, I'm using mergers and acquisitions as a platform to do good for business owners and also for social good. So the article really is about a really interesting story, which I'll take you through, which was I've worked for a very long time. It seems like a really long time, for 30 years, if we don't count my small apprenticeship as an Avon lady at 13. So I spent a big chunk of time in fashion on the commercial side, worked cross-sector. And I was approached by the DWP to become an ambassador for fashion for their Disability Confident campaign. And what that really was about was to become an advocate really for greater inclusion of brilliant people who are currently not being employed and largely because of their differences and disabilities. So obviously, well, there were two responses really to that. One, I was obviously delighted to be able to help and thrilled. But at the same time, I was really ashamed because they asked me, you know, have you ever employed somebody with a disability? And it really stopped me in my tracks. And I thought, no, I haven't. And I didn't know what was worse. One, that I hadn't employed somebody with a disability, but two, that I hadn't even considered it.
Right.
And I think the latter for me seems to be worse because if you speak to somebody, I speak to most people who have a disability, they use one word that's come to mind. They feel invisible.
Right.
Feel invisible. So I was really quite, I did feel quite ashamed about it. But so I kind of went off then and it kind of left to do my own thing. And that took me then to research, you know, lots of things around disability and disability in the workplace. And I ended up working with the Down Syndrome Association and their WorkFit program. So they work with organizations around the UK and to promote the benefit of employing brilliant and talented young people who happen to have, and I say that in the right way, Down syndrome. And that was just a great experience. And I got to meet lots of brilliant people and ultimately employed a fantastic, fantastic lady, Isabel Lucy Quinn at all times. Got GCSE in hospitality and catering. Very, very, very progressive, very forward thinking, very able, and very wanting to have a normal life. And I remember when I offered her the job and I said to Isabel, you know, why is it you want this job? you know, why have you agreed to take this job? And she said, because you take me seriously. Wow. That was a really profound moment for me,
yeah.
You know, and I could have happily have thrown myself at Isabel and give her a hug, but knowing Isabel, she'd have really hated that. That didn't happen. But ultimately, she changed my life. She changed my world. She changed my paradigm.
Wow.
And it made me look at the world, our corporate world, especially in a very different way and thinking, why are we not doing this? Why as a community are we not embracing a talent pool which, it, to all intents and purposes, is super committed, super loyal, wanting to learn, wanting to have a great job that they can make a real difference in, and that adds so much richness to the culture of your business that beyond anything that I could ever have imagined, ever. You know, it did so much for me, it did so much for my team, and it did a lot for the people and the clients and the suppliers I worked with. And in that process, also, DWP were asking me to do lots of articles, write articles.
The DWP, so for international listeners, DWP is?
The Department of Work and Pensions.
Yep.
So deal very much from an employment perspective, employment kind of initiatives, and so a government agency. So I went researching for something, to write something different, because I'm also a mental health advocate, so I didn't want to go into the kind of the more, what's the word I'm looking for, standard routes of what we consider sometimes to be disability. So I ended up on a site which was ADHD in adults, and I thought, well, that's interesting. I didn't know, I thought that was just naughty children in schools.
Right.
So I read through that, and I don't know if anybody's ever had that moment where you read something that is far too close to the truth and that hot rash starts to come up your neck.
Yep.
I was thinking, okay, this sounds really familiar to me. And then they offered a little quiz at the end, which I did about 22 times. And,
about 22 times.
Yeah, at least a bit like that, you do a pregnancy test thing, surely not. And yes, yep. It said, surely, yes, you quite possibly are. So I went and sought out a psychologist and got a formal assessment. And actually at 48 was diagnosed with adult attention deficit disorder. So I don't have the H for hyperactivity. I have the H for hyperfocus.
So what does that manifest? How does that manifest in terms of day-to-day business or day-to-day life?
So that contextualised why I'm particularly terrible at lots of things and super brilliant at others. So for instance, you know, I've always been able to see solutions to problems super quickly. I mean, so quickly, and be able to put all the moving parts together very quickly,
yep.
Which is brilliant for me, not so great for the clients that I used to work with on a consultancy basis, who would kind of be left in this backdraft of of this turbo engine that would come in and go, whoa, I know what you need to do. Whoosh, here you go, bang.
Bye.
Here's the answer. And then, see you soon, I'm off. And they'd be left lying on the floor in a dark room thinking, what happened there? So ADHD people are very, very good at doing that. We're very creative people. We're very, you know, we can apply lots of great thoughts as long as it's quick and it doesn't take us, you know, into the depths of analysis, because what we don't do is the detail very well, which is why we make brilliant strategists at the top level, but we need the detailed foot soldiers to make it happen.
Mm.
So a lot of business people may recognize this in themselves, that they can start projects. They get so excited about the new project, the vision, it's going to be the next big thing, and they've written the business, but it's all coming together. And then they're bored. They're thinking, they've done this now. Now they're bored. Now they want project number 3, 4, 5, and 6.
So, oh, yeah. I see that so often.
Yeah. They start and don't finish. Or they have so many projects on the go, they never really reach their full potential. And people, you'll know who you are because people say to you, wow, you can do a lot, can't you? Or you're spinning a lot of plates. Or, God, how do you come up with all of these things so quickly? And they rarely have an answer other than, it's just what I am, it's just what I do, it's just, I'm just great, you know. So, but I guess the irony in all of that is, you know, I found myself 30 years in of being in business, having found this new world of wanting to fight for greater inclusion of brilliant people, and finding myself actually in that pool. I am part of that group, you know, and this is why I kind of, it's a very tenuous and sensitive subject area, when you talk about the word and you use the word disability, there's a very big divide line is, should we actually be using that word? Does it suggest we're broken already?
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. And so I kind of, you know, I'm very aware that I like to use, it's just, you know, different abilities. We all have different abilities.
But the point you've already made is that you are super brilliant at some things and you're designing the work, or you found yourself now positioned in terms of business doing stuff that you're talented at, you've got a real passion for, and you've got a real focus for. So so it's a strength. You're just playing to that strength.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's taken me a long time to reach a point where I know that, you know, whilst in some levels it's counterproductive and quite destructive, you know, for instance, one of the areas that ADHD people struggle with is finances. Yep. Because there's a detail in there, you know, and we've spoken before, Gavin, about ridiculous little things. It seems ridiculous to other people that I don't open my post. Right. There's no rhyme or reason to it. I just don't open my post. Now I have other people that open the post for me. In the beginning, when I first went self-employed, I didn't do that. And I ended up in a
room. And explain why. It's not because you believe yourself above opening the post. There's a reason, though, isn't there?
It's detail. I know it's ridiculous. It's an activity that does not interest me.
Yeah.
In fact, I was talking to a chief executive of a large charity at a networking event last week, and I was talking to her about, you know, we were talked about disability and all the rest of it, and she said, oh, my son has ADHD, and we've only just realised we're getting assessed. And I said, oh, amazing. So this and that and the other. And I said, I can relate because, you know, me too. And she said, even to down to, I bet he doesn't open his post. And she said, no, but neither do I.
I'll let you into a secret. I'm not good at it either.
We were like, by the tram stop saying, oh my God, I think I've got ADHD too. So, you know, it's like secret society and whisperers.
You're on a recruitment drive.
But she's a chief executive of a large charity.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting. For me, things like that, I just have to make sure that I have a great team around me.
So how does it help you in business then? And then let's link back to the M&A piece and then we'll come back to the team. So how does your ADHD and your hyper focus help you in the area that you're now majoring in and passionate about, which is M&A, mergers and acquisitions?
Yeah, so with me, obviously, because one of my great strengths is that I can see solutions very quickly to problems that some, you know, business owners can't always see for themselves. And if I lock on 30 years of commercial experience across, you know, lots of different sectors and verticals, it means I have the ability now to help business owners with whether they want to exit or whether they want to grow. And I can make those things happen really quickly for them without overwhelming them. So for me, I'm using my M&A business as a platform for good, because doing good is good for business, you know, and that's one of Richard Branson's terms. So, you know, I can go to the market now, and I'm very, very focused because I know where I'm going. So I want to, so I have a purpose now. I have passion for this brilliant ability to help business owners exit, whether it's to retire or to go on to new adventures or to grow. But I'm also using it as a platform to do good, because for every acquisition I make, I'm going to find an opportunity to employ somebody that would not otherwise be employed.
Brilliant.
So somebody with a difference that can make a difference to these organisations will be recruited. Right. And that's small efforts done on a repeated basis will make that change. So I'm doing that. And I'm very focused on working with the right people, so that see the benefit of that. The right buyers, the right business owners who are looking for exit or growth. What I tend to get feedback from people is that, you know, we see your purpose, we see your passion, and therefore we see this, that you are the safe pair of hands.
Great. And so many people that are looking to sell their business after a life's work want that business to be sold. It's not just about the money, is it? They want it to be sold to a safe pair of hands. And one of their top sort of criteria is that the employees are going to be, A, retain their jobs and going to be looked after.
100%. You know, so much of what I do really is relationship building. M&A is rarely about the numbers, rarely. That comes at the end of any conversation. Of course, there's always going to be, you know, a need to discuss it because there's always an aspiration. But actually, you know, 80-90% of any conversations we have always start with, I need to make sure my staff are looked after into the future. I need to feel secure that when I leave, when I walk out that door, that they are protected and that so is my legacy.
Yeah.
That comes at the top of everything.
Yeah.
At the top of everything.
And I think and one actually, of the biggest responsibility any business owner's got is the recognition that the success or otherwise of the business is having a direct effect on those individuals that they employ, on their ability to pay the mortgage or pay the rent and the livelihoods of their own families. So they take that responsibility very seriously. So it's understandable that that would be a key part of a consideration of who they sold their business to.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's kind of a sadness around this as well for me, is that too many business owners leave it too late. They leave that consideration too late. You know, sometimes it's not through their own, you know, fault. It may be that they've become ill. And all of a sudden that reality of I've got to go, what's now going to happen to my staff? What happens now is too late. There's no succession planning. So I feel great sadness sometimes that sometimes the doors have to be shut because business owners haven't taken that time to plan and to think, right, well, what happens in the next 5 years when I'm going to be ready to go? You know, because ultimately they've worked so hard and they've gone into, you know, they've worked in that business. All of your listeners will feel the pain of running their own businesses. You and I do because we've done it ourselves. So
I feel that pain really close to home. You know, my dad this year will be 79 and he's still not sold his business. And it's a real purpose and a driver for me to help people to exit their businesses because I see him live that pain and I'm helping him to sell his business. And in the nicest possible way, he no longer has the mental energy or, I don't know, faculty is probably not the right word, but the ability to cope with it anymore. And quite frankly, he should be enjoying this chapter of his life, not stressing about whether he's going to sell his business or not.
People hang on for such a long time. Yeah. They hang on for such a long time. They know they should do it, but it's always tomorrow. It's always tomorrow. You know, I think there was that, you know, there's that the story that goes around of the Macmillan nurse who, you know, is looking at people in their final days.
Yeah,
that's not one person regrets not having spent more time in the office.
Sure.
You know, so I think it's about having kind of really building in that plan for the future to say, you know, we none of us know what tomorrow will bring. None of us will know what tomorrow brings. So prepare your business now for the future and, you know, start to be really mindful of, you know, how will you protect your legacy? How will you ensure that you've got the right buyer? And also it's a little word of warning. I have to be very careful here because I've been quite vocal on LinkedIn on this before and I've got a torrent of abuse and haters. Usually from the people I'm talking about, which is the broken community, business brokers.
The broken community.
Let me just say the broken community are not broke. But unfortunately what happens is, you know, businesses don't know what to do. They've left it. And now they're at the point they want to sell their business and their first port of call thinks, well, I'll find somebody online who sells businesses. And then before you know it, you've been, you know, enticed in with this wondrous deal and, you know, and parting with a chunk of money up front and a chunk of money at the back end, but actually just sits on the broken shelf with the thousands of other ones that don't get marketed. So, you know, I think doing good in terms of that respect, and you and I are very similar on this, is that even if we don't acquire the businesses or we don't end up acquiring those businesses, we still look out for those owners, whether that is to help find new, better acquirers or investors. Because ultimately, we should all be supporting one another in this game.
For sure. I think, you know, the biggest drive for
me. We don't want to be in it forever, everyone. We don't. There's a life to be had, you know.
Yeah.
There are things that we should and want to do, adventures in our lives. So as much as, you know, it's great if we have a passion in our business, there should also be passion for life and living the adventure afterwards.
So succession is one of the themes that was coming out from what you were saying, Suze, around that many business owners are not thinking long enough about who's going to succeed them, whether that's an internal member or a new recruit that comes in that might look like a management buyout, or whether that's succession in terms of a sale of the business.
Yeah, 100%. And I think there are some other other areas that business owners should be looking at as they're kind of preparing. And that preparation can be anything, you know, it can be as long as you want it to be, because I think the further you plan ahead, the more prepared you'll be when that time comes. So it'll be a much easier process. And those things are, one, that you have the right staff in place, obviously. Two, that you make sure that you're building in those second tier management structures, because the difficulty is for a lot of business owners is that they think they can sell a business that it actually relies 100% on them. As key workers, no investor or very few investors will buy a business where all of the responsibility falls into the hands of one person. So you have to be very aware of that one to build a second tier management structure in place that are passionate about the business as you are, and they have the ability then to move into your shoes when you leave. Very, very important. Very important. And also is to ensure that, you know, that kind of full reporting and trajectory of growth is always documented. You kind of almost run ISO kind of approach to your business. We call it building up a data room, so that all of your HR, all of your operational activities, all your finances are organized really, really well. So that when any potential investor comes along, you've got everything there that they need to get their hands on.
Yep.
The quicker you do that, the easier the transaction is.
Yep. I think one of my clients, for example, I'm working with the two entrepreneurs who are the founders and owners of the business, but the majority of the work that I'm doing is building out the skills and the capability and the confidence of that second tier management structure.
So important. So as an analogy, I've just acquired a commercial interior design business, and I work with new build property developers. It's a great little business, turns over 1.2 million,
yep.
Two directors, one's exiting to retire, spend more time with his family. The other is staying on for a period of about 3 years. They're both in their 60s.
Yeah.
So it was interesting that they haven't actually got a second tier management in place, which is not usually what I would consider. I wouldn't consider an acquisition if that wasn't in place, but I can see that they have the right people in place for us to be able to, you know, do that talent work and that kind of growth with them to move them into. And they also have a very, you know, strong pipeline of clients with signed contracts. So that's a kind of an example. We have to do some work with it, but they hadn't really prepared, and actually it did affect their valuation a little bit.
Okay.
It did. The second one that we're about to do an acquisition with is a much bigger business, 8.2 million. Again, they work with new build property developers doing their painting and decorating. Two founders, brothers, and actually interesting, they've done it the right way. They've got a managing director in place. They've got a strong, strong second tier management. Everything is in order. It is a tight ship. Any document that I would ever need is delivered to me within minutes. So you know you're on to a really great business.
But there's a great example about, you know, back to your earlier point about business owners hang on too long. And you said that within the context of a sale, but it's also in the context of the role that they perform in the business. So, you know, actually relinquishing that managing director role and stepping up to being, whether it's more strategic stuff and chairman or chief exec or whatever you want, but handing over the detailed operational management of the business sooner. And I've seen time and time again examples like the one you just cited, where the founder has gotten a really capable managing director that's going to run and grow the performance and the efficiency of day-to-day operations. That's freed up the owner to go and develop new strategic relationships, open, you know, new avenues of revenue and profit for the business. And the business has thrived because the owner, yeah, the founder, is playing where they play best.
Oh, that's exactly it. You have to get past your own ego. I think nobody's going to do it better than me. Yes, they are. Yeah. So, yes, they are, actually. And I think the sooner we recognise that, the better. So the painting and decorating people, the one thing they did brilliantly was they took it to just over £1 million and then realised, you know what, we don't know how to take it to that next level. You know, they were painters and decorators. That's what they started at. So they had somebody that was already in their business that they saw potential in, and they elevated him, and he took them from 1 to 7. In a relatively short, yeah. So, you know, and so where that's left them is exactly what you've just said, Gavin, is that they're ambassadorial to their business. So they go and do that high level stuff where, you know, they are out, you know, doing the strategic stuff and networking, and they're out there doing those pieces. They're not active in the business on an operational level because they know their place. And actually makes the exit easier again, because they're not hanging on to the shirt tails of this passion, this, you know, all these years. They're not there going, I'm not ready to leave. They've already gone.
But the irony there is, by letting go and getting over their own ego and putting in a really good manager in place, it doesn't have to be an MD, it could be a general manager, it could be an ops manager, by putting in a really good person in place to manage the day-to-day operations, they're actually serving their employees even better, because they're labelling the business, they're taking off the leash that's holding back the growth of the business.
It's so empowering.
Yeah.
You know, and investing in the development of your employees is hugely important at a time where, you know, where there's a real cultural shift in how, I guess, here's me sounding really old now, but there's, you know, the millennial group that are coming in, they have a very different cultural approach to work. So I think when you get the right team, it's about really investing in their development and you know, making them part of this greater shareholder value. For me, that's absolutely empirical. It's so pivotal in that kind of growth potential as well. So me as an investor, I want to go in and see a motivated, engaged staff. I want to see them, you know, excited about it. I want to see, what I don't want is really unhappy people who think, thank God they're going.
Right.
Thank God they're going. And I might go too now that they've got. So, you know, yes, absolutely. Staff is very, very high on the agenda.
So looping back round to the discovery about your hyper-focus, how does that help you in your business activity? The reason why I asked that question is so that other people that were listening earlier on into the conversation thinking, oh, that sounds a bit like me. How are you playing to that strength?
So for me, what I do best is I'm a connector of people and a connector of ideas and a connector of problems to solutions. So that's what I go and do. So I love going out and meeting new business owners and talking about stuff and you know, really getting into the bones of who they are as people and their businesses, because I'm engaged and I want to know about them. I genuinely want to know about them because that's part of my brain. I need to understand them. I can't just have a top level view. I need to know, do they play golf on a Saturday?
Sure.
You know. So now when I've done that, then I come back and I know I can quickly decide, is this going to be right for me? Yes, no. Because I have that, my brain needs to know quickly. Yes, no. And that helps me move on quicker, and it helps my potential buyers move on quicker. If I decide that an acquisition is going to be right for both parties, then I then hand over the detail to my team.
Right.
So all of the notes that I have to write up, you know, I have to get all the financial projections created. I have to get the due diligence set in motion. All the detail is done by my team. So I have my team consists of someone in HR, in finance, in operations. I have a VA and a PA, so one's abroad, one isn't. And together they know what my process is, and I have to systemize it as much as possible. So it allows me to keep doing what I do best, which is to be out with my potential clients and future and helping them. So I would say to anyone who's listening is know what your limitations are and don't be afraid to say, I'm crap at this. I don't know why I've been doing it for so long. Because actually, if we understood that our time is very valuable, we wouldn't be doing our own bookkeeping and doing it really badly. Because at whatever, you know, £1,000 an hour, £50 an hour, £100 an hour, that's an expensive bookkeeper. You know, so there's a cost benefit as well to thinking about, what am I doing that I'm terrible at that is slowing me down? Actually, if I delegated it to somebody else, it would make actually a pretty big and positive and quick impact on my business. So I think, you know, very quickly, be open about your limitations, be really strong on your strengths and just go after those.
What do you think gets in the way of people doing that? Because that's sound advice, and we've all heard that many times before. Practically, and maybe best spoken from your own experience, because you said when you first went self-employed, you didn't do that and it didn't work. So what was the thing that you kind of realized, I really cannot carry on this way and I need to delegate?
You kind of adopt that small business mentality. You know, you've worked in big business probably in the past before, but suddenly that doesn't apply to you anymore. And so you've got that, okay, well, I've now got to look at my costs because nobody's paying for this for me. So people start thinking, well, what's that going to cost me? I can't afford it. I'll have to just do it myself. You know, not realizing it's taking them, you know, three times, you know, longer to do something. So I think there's that. I think it's this, I should do it. I know better, so I'm best doing it because nobody can do it best than me. It's me, so I'll do it. And that's a really dangerous attitude to do. And again, I did it myself. I'm the best at this. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to do it all. So I think it's a combination of mindset, you know, small business. I'm playing small. I've got to operate small. The sooner you get out of that, the better. So I remember I'd set up a business, my second one out of being self-employed that was now not going to fail. Thought, right from the start, it was just me, but I'm going to get call answering service set up, which I did. So I had people answering the phone, even though I could have done it because it was nobody phoning me. I made sure that I had a bookkeeper in place. I made sure that anything that I needed to do from an administration point of view was done by a VA service. So straight away, I changed my mindset about, actually, I'm not small, I'm big. And I don't have to do it. It's my choice. I have choice. So my choice is I'm going to let somebody else do it. And also then understanding that there's a cost-benefit ratio.
Hi, Gavin here. As you look forward, maybe you have a desire to exit your business for a certain number in the next 3, 5, or even 10 years. Maybe you are earlier in your business journey, but have a certain lifestyle aspirations or things you want to provide for your family. Or maybe now you're at the point where you want to exit, but haven't been able to find a way of doing it. If you keep going on the same trajectory, are you going to achieve the results that you want in the time frame that you desire? If you know that the current trajectory of your business is not going to deliver that, now is the time to start to plan, to start putting things in place, to be working on the things that will deliver the results. We can help. Get in touch, because we have a track record of helping business owners to transform their results, accelerate the growth of their business, complete acquisitions and exit. Email me, gavin@gavinpreston.com. Let's jump on a call to get you back on track to realizing the life plans you spent all this time working towards. That's gavin@gavinpreston.com. I look forward to speaking to you soon. So now you're dealing with acquisitions ranging from 1 million to 8 million and upwards. And so you're going to have a lot of moving parts, not only through the due diligence and acquisition process, but, you know, post-purchase when you're now the owner of those businesses. So your focus is going to be, I want to find new acquisitions to pull together a group. So you're going to have to carry on with the delegation.
Yes, 100%. And it's working exceptionally well at the moment. And I'll tell you why else it works, because I have to think, you know, I have to look at all of the moving parts and then some more, because I'll acquire a business and think, now what needs to happen? What is the best thing for that business? And because of my ability to kind of shoot to the end goal very quickly, I can say, well, actually, you know, we need to drive shareholder value from inside. Or actually, I might think, no, do you know what I need to do? I need to go and find another business and merge it with them straight away. Boom, so now I'm on. So, and I can only do that because I've delegated everything else. Now, if I was hanging on to, oh, I'm going to do, you know, the cash flow projections and I'm going to make the notes and whether that wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. I would be so slow. And I have, again, back to what you said earlier, you know, I've set myself quite a lofty target, which is to help 15 business owners move on to new adventures this year. You know, I know, but I don't see that as a big deal. And I think I don't see it as a big deal. In fact, I know I don't see it as a big deal, because I'm now in the position where after 30 years, I know what I'm really good at. I know what I'm really terrible at. And I'm using that to move quickly and efficiently.
But the other heartening point around that point is that, you know, many people through their working life, whether it's their career or their journey as a business founder and owner, struggle to think, what am I really good at? Where's my real sort of sweet spot? And you're saying that after 30 years in business, you found it now, and it's given you, never too late to change direction, and it's given you not only a new leash, of a lease of life rather, but what it's doing is you're taking and building on all that 30 years of experience to really move at pace now.
Yeah, you know, and I think I'm so lucky. I'm so, so lucky. And I, and at the same time, I reflect on some dark times, you know, dark times where, you know, I was really lost. And I didn't know what I was doing, because what happens with ADHD, as I know now, is that it can also wrap itself around other labels like anxiety.
Right.
And for me, that manifested itself in brain fog. You know, there was a time where, you know, I was looking down a path which was all of a sudden, for somebody who used to make big decisions very quickly, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't do it. I had some really quite dark times, and, you know, which brought me into this kind of appreciation of mental health, and why I'm so, you know, big on advocacy for that, is that sometimes you have to go through some really tough times and allow yourself and give yourself permission and be willing to let go of things that you know don't serve you. That really, and I remember, again, is there such thing as coincidence? I don't think so. I was doing some contract work in a business, and I was having some lunch, and there was a bookcase, and there was a book there, and it was Louise Hayes, you know, the...
Yeah, you can heal yourself.
Yeah, the publishing author. And it's Heal Your Life. Yeah. And I thought, oh, well, it's a bit woolly, this. This is a little bit tree-huggy, but come on, let's give it a go. And actually, it was fundamentally life-changing for me, because I remember thinking, I'm hanging on to things here that aren't serving me, that are not serving me. And some of that is ego. You know, I'm known for being the person with the fast brain. I'm known for being the person that's great in business. I'm known for all the positive stuff. When actually in the background, that all of that was kind of not me at all. So I think, you know, if you're in a situation where you're not happy or things aren't feeling good in your business, you need to give yourself permission to stop.
But the analogy, though, the picture that's coming into my mind as you talk, Suze, is one of, in the past, you were the areas where you were brilliant, you know, it's like your foot on the accelerator, your foot on the gas, but you equally had the other foot on the brake, which is the things that you were that weren't your strength, you were not good at, that you were having to force, or you're choosing to force yourself to do, was equally holding you back. And now you've let go of that stuff and you've built a structure and a team around you, your foot's just on the gas.
It is. And I also make no apologies for myself anymore. And I say to people, I really buggered up my businesses. You know, at some point in my life, I've had failures, but they're the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, so putting my foot on the gas now is very much fueled by a real sense of purpose, a real genuine passion. And I love what I do. You know, I love that every single day I get to speak to brilliant people. And it gives you an energy. You know, we all hear about, you know, you want to jump out of bed in the morning and race and get up to your job. Well, I do that. I do that because I can't wait to start my day. And that sounds so, you know, uber happy clappy. But trust me, I've paid my dues to get here. Yeah. Listeners, I have. Yeah. And I think I showed you last time, didn't I? I had a tattoo done.
Yes.
My teenage daughters, I thought it was hysterical. But I had it done in an obvious place on my wrist because I make it a point to wave my arms around enough for people to go, oh, that's an interesting tattoo. What's that about? And it gets me onto a dialogue about business and mental health and adversity and purpose and how actually sometimes we just need to slow things down, really slow things down, let your brain be at peace for a little bit. And before you know it, you know, things start to come together in a different way.
So talking about purpose, you know, something I talk about a lot, it's the first stage of the six-step strategy compass model is about, you know, you need to find your purpose. And we had a conversation just before I pressed record on this, and we're talking about you're now marrying your passion with your purpose, but for some time you struggled to find your purpose. And I'm sure that many listening to this would also relate to the fact that they're here, hear this idea about purpose banded around a lot. They get it conceptually, but they struggle with, gosh, what's my purpose? And you got a recent insight, didn't you, do you want to share? Or I took note of it earlier on so I could share it on your behalf.
You could paraphrase.
So it was suggested back to you when in a conversation about your purpose that, you know, your purpose is about inclusion of people with disabilities, and you will achieve your purpose through the recognition of your own disability.
Yes, yes. So, you know, and that's very, very, in some ways it's super poignant because, you know, there I was fighting the fight for brilliant people without realizing I was part of that same community.
Mm-hmm.
So after my diagnosis, you know, that reality wasn't lost on me. That truth wasn't lost on me. And I thought, here I am. I've searched for a purpose. I remember lying in bed, what's my purpose? You know, reading the blogs, doing tarot cards, you name it, reading it all. What's my purpose? What is it? I don't know. Oh, my gosh. You know, in the background, I've always, everything I've done is about helping people. But still, you know, I'm searching for this thing and reading about these, you know, these inspirational stories about people who found their way in life. And I was just desperate to find mine, you know, but it was there. I was with a diagnosis and suddenly finding myself thinking, it's here. This is my purpose because I am part of the community. So I am invested, every inch of me is invested into this because I represent the very people that I want to support into the future, that have a right to have dignity and an equal right to share this planet and the wonderful things that we can have access to. So yeah.
But so anybody want to, anybody?
It took me 49 years to get there and going through some real roller coaster experiences. Would I change them? People say, don't regret what you've done. Do I regret them? I can't regret them. Would I change them? Absolutely. Some of them I would. Yes, of course. Nobody wants to feel pain. But without that pain, you know, if you look at Adele and her songwriting and her albums that rocketed, they were fueled by pain.
Yeah.
And we are motivated by pleasure or pain, aren't we?
Indeed. Absolutely. And you actually look that, you know, if there's two fundamental drivers for all behaviour, motivation is to either move away from pain or to move toward pleasure. A lot of very successful business people, entrepreneurs, are more driven by moving away from pain and specifically to move away from the fear of being poor.
That's a huge one. Huge. So, you know, and I grew up poor. I grew up poor financially. I grew up very wealthily from a perspective of a strong family, but we didn't have any money. You know, my dad was a soldier in the army. My mum was German. They met and we lived in Germany. And at 24, he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. Oh. You know, he couldn't work. We had no money. He nearly died. So we were poor. However, you know, I have a very strong mother, a German mother, who would say, you know, if you can peel one carrot, you can peel 10.
Mm-hmm.
Carrots cost nothing. So, you know, I remember as a young child living and being grateful to live in my gorgeous council house, and I'm still very grateful for that, you know, start in life, that she would make dinner and then she would say, now go and take that out to the poor people.
Wow.
And we would go and take it to our neighbours who, you know, were worse off than we were. So I've run away from poverty, and that's not a great motivator. That's the wrong thing to do.
But the thread right the way throughout everything that you talk about is go back to one of your earlier quotes in this this conversation. It was like, doing good is good for business. And you know, I put myself into the shoes of a business owner looking for someone to pass the baton over to as I retire. And I'm thinking, if I was sat in front of someone like yourself, Suze, I would go, wow, my business is going to be in great hands. And more importantly, the people in my business are going to be in great hands.
Yeah. That has to be the single most important consideration. How are you going to, you know, furnish your house so that when you hand over the keys to somebody else to move in, how are you going to do that? Because what you need to do is make sure that that house has got all of the comfort in there, all the security in there. You know, everything's where it needs to be. The furniture's in the right place. The locks are in the right place. And it's a useful analogy. You know, have you got your house in order?
Mm-hmm.
And if not, which are the rooms that need fixing and fitting and repairing?
And your analogy here about your room. So one room might be HR, another one might be documented systems and processes. There's operations. Another might be the financial stability of the business. So finance, it's your business functions represent each room of the house, I take it.
It does. And actually, the other room you need to build in, probably in the attic somewhere, is you as your individual you.
Okay.
What do you want? What do you want for your future? Because if you don't build that in, you're not going to get it. Thought becomes things, then, you know, you need to be thinking about what acquisition, what an exit looks like. Does it? Yeah. Does it mean you can go on and do great things for yourself, for your family? You know, you have to bring yourself into that picture.
And you certainly need another set of goals, because once, let's say, you've sold your business and, you know, the deal's being done and you wake up, you know, after a holiday and you wake up and you go, wow, what's next? You need some, as human beings, we need that opportunity for growth, a new challenge, particularly business owners.
Well, you speak to any retiree couple. That's an interesting conversation to have. 9 times out of 10, they want to kill each other. you know, what most, again, it's succession planning, and this is succession life planning, which is a lot of people don't prepare for retirement.
No.
So they think it's going to be brilliant. I mean, you're probably the same, Gavin, you've probably spoken to lots of people who've, you know, they've exited their business, they made loads of money, think, oh, at last. I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to play guitar on the back of a camel. I'm going to do all the things that I wanted to do. And they do them and think, I'm so bored now.
We start something
I'm
else.
So then. Bored. I don't want to play golf anymore. I'm bored of my guitar. I'm doing it. And actually...
And if I don't leave the house and do something else, my other half is going to kill me. Yeah.
They're going to kill me. Or there's many a time that they've either got sick or mental health issues have kicked in. I know that a good friend of ours... sold his private equity firm in London for a huge amount of money. I mean, huge, double-digit, huge. You know, and a great, brilliant guy, down-to-earth guy, and did exactly that. And then 6 months in was really battling with mental health.
Wow.
I mean, never, ever experienced it because he no longer had an identity. He no longer had, you know, this is Dave. And Dave is this, and this is what he does, and he's brilliant, and he's got a purpose. Gets up in the morning and he does this. Sorry, my printer's going off in the background. So he no longer does that.
But you also see that with people that have had either, you know, returning to work from either maternity leave or a change of career, whether it's from the military and moving out of the military or after a redundancy and a period of time before they're struggling to get back into work, that whole identity piece is critical to in order to have the confidence to take the next steps.
It really is, and I've only really gained that insight by being around people who have exited, and you know, and again, it depends on what age they exit. You know, so for instance, my most recent acquisition is 67. Thank you, 67, which I think is late. You know, but again, I suppose we're getting accustomed to believe that we need to retire. Our retirement age is about 70. But for some people, again, you know, he was very astute and he had the pension scheme in place and he's invested his money. But that doesn't happen for everybody. No. But they haven't kind of considered wealth management as part of their growth process. Their, you know, their development work is all kind of really focused on the business. So they've kind of neglected that personal wealth management, which means that sometimes they have to hang on in there till the end. Because there's no choice, and hanging in there for the most amount of money. I mean, I've heard a desperately sad story where, you know, someone's hung on for the best possible deal and, you know, wanting X amount of millions of pounds and knowing in the back of his mind it's not worth it, then unfortunately dying.
Yeah.
And leaving nothing.
Tragic. Yeah.
Yeah, leaving nothing because, so, you know, it's worth, when you look at succession planning, is to consider yourself as an individual at the same time as considering yourself as a business owner. So making sure that, you know, you're making best use of money, you know, we've got, you know, the pension crisis and all that stuff. Now it's, you know, we're having to consider different things. You know, I have a small self-administered pension scheme. So I've, as a business, a limited company, I can use my pension. I can use that to invest in property or invest in other companies. So I'm making best use of that. And I have a wealth program. But not everybody has that.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I think it's about taking some time out. And everyone, and this is the one commodity people all, you know, say they don't have enough of time. We, none of us have time, but we all have time. It's how we allocate it. And I think the greatest gift you can give yourself is to take some time out of your business, wherever you're at now, look at it from a holistic perspective as well as a commercial one and think, am I in the place I need to be right now? If not, what do I need to fix?
Yeah.
Am I in the right place now for an exit? If not, what do I need to do?
Yeah.
And just take the time out, you know, and if they're struggling with purpose and passion, talk to people.
Yeah.
Just talk, be open. So it is all about, again, it's about personal well-being and personal time and understanding that if you take the time out and you really consider, you know, what you want from everything, from your business and your life, you'll make it work.
You will, and sometimes you need some help in thinking that through. I was with a new client just yesterday, two very, very capable and incredibly well-prepared business leaders, execs, whatever title you want to put to them. And when you are doing the thinking yourself, you're going to have to come up with the questions and then come up with the answers to those questions. And by me running the questioning side of that combination and facilitating that thought process, you know, the comments at the end of the day was, whoa, can't believe how much ground we've covered. Thank you so much. That was a really positive experience. Could those guys have done that same thing themselves without me? Yes, but they wouldn't have made as much progress and got the depth of insight without it. So, yeah, you shouldn't be afraid to reach out, to have conversations with other business people, with mentors, coaches, whatever, in order to help you think this stuff through, because this is literally life-changing stuff, isn't it, in terms of the future of your life and your business?
You know what? You've made such an important point there, which is, you know, the power of coaching. And I'm not saying that because we're on this call, because, you know, I qualified as a coach 16 years ago and was so brilliant at it, I realised I shouldn't be doing it. So far too directive, ADHD. But actually investing in coaching can accelerate everything in a way you never thought possible. I have my own coach. I have my own mentors, because you need to be kept on track. So, you know, and I think there's a misconception about what coaching can be, because there's a real mixed bag of consultants and coaches out there, you know. And I think, I know you obviously, and I know what you do. And I think if of course people can work it out for themselves sometimes. And if they do, it tends to be over a longer period of time, because they're so wrapped up in their own businesses and in the detail, they're in the business. They haven't got time to step back and think, okay, let me be completely, completely subjective about this. Let's just be really honest. That doesn't happen. And what you find is with a really great coach and a really great mentor and a really great consultant, if they can have the three together, that really phenomenal things can happen very quickly, very, very quickly. I mentor people for many years, and it's incredible that once, you know, they have that realization for themselves, prompted by that brilliant coach, what can be achieved is far more than they would ever have expected. And I think even, you know, because I know that you do coaching, Gavin, but you also do obviously transformation work, and again, I remember having a quote that's my own, I claim it as my own, years ago, and say, you know, you have a choice, really. You have a choice. You can work it out yourself or get the whistleblower in.
Oh, I love that.
Boom!
Oh, I love that
one. I'm here all day. You can have that one.
Wow, what a quote to end on in terms of the conversation. You can work it out yourself or you can get the whistleblower in.
There you go. Copywriting in my spare time.
Right. That's what I've written down. So out of summary then, you just kind of like summarize the kind of businesses that you're interested in. You know, if there was somebody that was listening that could potentially be one of those 15 people that you want to help exit their business and move on to new exciting chapters in their life, what kind of, how do people get hold of you and what kind of businesses are you interested in?
So you can get hold of me through LinkedIn. It's interesting, isn't it? I don't have a website. And people tend to go, it like shock, horror, I'm doing multi-million pound deals and I don't have a website. There's something. But so you can get me on LinkedIn, Susanna Hancock. And I like to work with brilliant business owners who tend to, have a turnover of around $500,000 to 10. My sweet spot tends to be $1.5 million to $8 million at the moment. They are usually at the stage where they are either ready to retire out and they want to move on to different things, whether that's different things as in retiring or different things, new projects. But either way, they're ready, they're motivated, they have a great team behind them, they've enjoyed a great success pattern and have a growth trajectory in front of them. They are working in markets where there is growth. They've got stability. And also, there may be businesses there that are thinking, oh, we've got to a level now and we don't know what to do next. We're not actually necessarily wanting to leave, but we don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
And so I'm really happy to work with those companies too. For companies that are distressed, I tend not to work too much with them, but I have a whole network of colleagues that do. So I'm equally happy to take any questions from any of your listeners who are in that position. But either way, if you're ready to make a move, whatever that move is, don't try and work it out for yourself. Bring me in and I'll help you. We'll get a whistleblower in.
Susanna, thank you so much for your time today and phenomenal quotes that came out of there.
Thank you. We'll be feeding off those, Gavin, for months to come.
I'm sure we will.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Speak soon.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Business Mastermind podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate and review so that more people like you can get their business back on their own terms, enjoy more success and create more impact.